702 Masterclass.
So the first ever film in Afrikaans, which is a dialect of Afrikaans, as I was saying, has been made. And we join now Ephraim Gordon, who is the co-founder of Paperjet Films and Nachvlieg Films, about Barakat. So take out the trailer if you can, and we'll tell you about where you'd be able to find opportunities to watch it, as we support local content. But over and above this, of course, it's an effort to give us just a glean into a particular subculture, into the way of life of people with who live in the Western Cape, particularly from the Cape Flats. And Ephraim is with us to tell us more about Barakat. Good afternoon, Ephraim.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I just loved the trailer. It just leaves you smiling. You laugh at in parts. I mean, I'm a parent. I'm a daughter to a single mother.
Yep.
And so there's just so much to relate to in the story. Just give us a brief synopsis.
Thank you so much, man.
Give us a brief synopsis for our listeners as to what Barakat is about.
I think before I do it, I just must make just one little correction. Barakat is not necessarily the first feature film in Afrikaans. I mean, there have been before. There have been Nomasiwe Ndertag, Nomaskoli, Alan Pakkies, and a bunch of others.
Would we categorize that as well?
This is just the first. Yeah, this is just the first that centers around a Cape Muslim family.
Oh, I see. So there's the distinction.
You know? Mm-hmm. So that's the distinction. But I mean, Barakat is a family film. It's a film about a matriarch who needs to bring her four adult sons together under the same roof again. They're still dealing with the grief of, you know, their father's passing a few years back, but she needs to bring them together to tell them that she's found love again.
Yes.
And that's all done around Eid, and the film plays off in the last weekend of Ramadan before Labaran. So it's a family movie set in Cape Town, on the Cape Flats and Lansdowne.
Yes, and I think lots of families would be able to relate to some of the dynamics, because the boys are resistant to what the mother has to tell them, right? Quite resistant to that. Just the need, the importance of showing this side of the community in the Cape Flats, and this is a side that often goes untold.
Yes, I mean, of course, like historically, we've seen very different representations of ourselves. If you think of life on the Cape Flats, if you think of the lives of colored people and brown people in general, it's always depicted in a way, often depicted in violent ways. And we thought, let's change the narrative. And I think that's what a film like Barakat is trying to do. That's what a lot of filmmakers at the moment are trying to do, to change the narrative around who we are and what, and to show a side of ourselves that's, you know, gentle and kind and light and loving, and, you know, to show family. And I think that's the one thing that connects us as people to other peoples. And I think it's important to show that side of ourselves. In terms of the dialect, we come from a world and we live in a province and in a country where Afrikaans has been compartmentalized, and has the language has historically been used often as a weapon of oppression. And we wanted to show that there are people who were previously oppressed people who speak the Afrikaans language as their mother tongue and speak it in very specific ways and have ownership of that language. And it is a part of their culture, and not necessarily the oppressive part of it, but that it's a language that lives in our homes, and it will continue to live in our homes. And we need to show that to the world, that there's a different side to this language.
Yes. And I think also what you're doing is shifting perceptions of the language itself, because we know that there's a lot of societal judgment on those who do speak it, whether in a professional setting or in an education setting. There's still a lot of work to be done to break down certain perceptions.
Yes, definitely. And that's often perceptions from outside of the Afrikaans-speaking community. Within the Afrikaans-speaking community, there exist similar tensions between dialects and between what it is to have to speak standard Afrikaans and who determines the standards of my language. Mm. Afrikaans as a language was developed from many, many different ingredients. You know, some of it comes from Dutch, some of it comes from the local Khoisan languages. Mm. Some, you know, some of the words, stuff comes from Khoisa. Some come from all over the Indian Ocean, Malay, Arabic, and all these things together because of the slave trade at Cape Town that brought so many different peoples together. This language as a means of communication, as a need to communicate, developed. So it contains all these different influences. And I think we should never fail to acknowledge that it is a language with so many different sides, so many different facets, and that they all should carry equal weight and should be celebrated.
Yes, yes. And would you say that you're part of the movement? Because we know that Afrikaans is not just a dialect, but infused in it, of course, is a culture, is a way of life, but there's a movement that's emerged out of it too.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's great to be part of a movement like this. I mean, 10 years ago, you would never hear someone speak in this dialect or many other Afrikaans dialects. But now I think the gatekeepers of the language have realized that the only way to make the language live into the future is to allow it to be represented in all its different shapes and forms, no matter whether you approve of a particular dialect, but there are people who speak it. Mm-hmm. And that should live in the common consciousness of all Afrikaans speakers, irrespective of color, irrespective of race, irrespective of religion, and it should become part of the larger South African lexicon.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for all these other dialects, and in my case, in our case, particularly Afrikaans, to enjoy its place under the sun.
I remember my guest, in fact, the guest that's coming up after you, Ephraim, Dr. Quinton Williams, says that this is actually an act of appropriation, reappropriation, because of that denial to identify with Afrikaans fully.
Yes. I mean, there's different theories as to how the Afrikaans language came about, you know. Of course, a particular theory was chosen, and that has become the rule and the story we tell. But there exists stories, and there are ways of legitimizing Afrikaans as a language and as a dialect that has been in existence since the Afrikaans language came about.
Yes.
You know, it's not something that developed afterwards. It's a fusion of cultures, and it lies in the way we say tay. It lies in particular words we use every day that might not even be written in the Afrikaans dictionary, but that is part of my Afrikaans. It's part of where I come from, and that to me is Afrikaans, and it is Afrikaans for a lot of people until they go to school and told that your Afrikaans is not right and your Afrikaans is different. And I think it's the difference of that language and the diversity of the language that will make the language lose the stigmas of the past, because the language is spoken by people who have been the former oppressor and the former oppressed. And it is through us recognizing that the language is called into existence through different voices, that process of reconciliation within the language and acceptance of the rest of the country of the language can start to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what you're saying is so powerful. And I think in it, there are lessons for society broadly. I remember with one of my cousins back in the day when we were still in primary school, and she managed to get space at because obviously we had a tiered education system. And when she got into the Model C school, their pronunciation was corrected. They would have to stay during breaks because Mr. Jacobs wanted them to not say birthday, but they had to say birthday. You know, so it's the trauma and a denial of full expression. So there's so many lessons in the work that's going on at the moment around Afrikaans. So
And you're right, it doesn't just exist in Afrikaans, it exists in English and many other languages in this country.
Mm. So tell the film, where is it at the moment? How would our listeners be able to watch it?
So we were in cinemas for a while, and you know, there were some complications around COVID and things like that when cinemas closed. Currently, we are on DSTV Box Office.
Yes.
So you can rent it on Box Office.
Yes.
That's where where it lives now. Mm-hmm. As time goes on, we will update the public on our Facebook page and on our social media as to where they could find it on other places.
Yeah.
But currently, the only place to find it is on DSTV Box Office.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much, Ephraim, and all of the best.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. That's Ephraim Gordon, the co-founder of Paperjet Films and Nachvlieg Films. And he was involved in the production of Barakat, which tells the story of a widowed Muslim mother who finds new love. But she falls in love with a Christian man and she wishes to marry, they wish to get married. However, she's got these four boys. She's got these four sons who are still trying to come to terms with the loss of their father. So there's just so much relatability. It is a family story. So check it out on Box Office if you can.
702 Masterclass.
Now, we brought you a brief understanding of the film Barakat, which just gives us such a perfect opportunity to explore Afrikaaps. And now we're joined by Dr. Quinton Williams. He's the director for the Center for Multilingualism and Diversities Research at the University of the Western Cape. And he's also equally excited about the growth of Afrikaaps. And he's doing interesting work, fascinating work in this regard. Dr. Williams, good afternoon. A pleasure to have you on the show.
Good afternoon, Azania. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, you were listening in on that conversation with Ephraim, and I just love the passion and the love with which this project was done. And before we get going, we have Rashid, who's given us a call from Johannesburg South, who also wants to comment about the origins of Afrikaans, and then we'll get your perspective. Rashid, sure. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Hi, I'm Shahid here from Mondia.
Oh, Shahid, my apologies.
No problem, I forgive you. Azania, Afrikaans, and basically the origins of it, right? And it's sad to hear that the term Afrikaaps is spent, because the slaves, your Khoi Khoi, the Malay, collectively started this language what we know as Afrikaans. Mm-hmm. And Dalian Mathieu, the author of Kring and the Boss, and a Phil African, actually is one of the few Afrikaans authors that rightfully said, look, Kitchen Dutch is what we know as mm-hmm. Afrikaans today. Mm-hmm. And it was started by the slaves in the Western Cape, right? And just hear my analogy. If you are Dutch settlers coming from Holland, you speak the language called Dutch, right? You have your natives, so-called natives, that can't speak the language, and it becomes Kitchen Dutch, right? And that's why there's so much similarity between Afrikaans and Kitchen Dutch. Now, for those people that's truly the architects of the language, to be marginalized, to say, mm-hmm. okay, what you speak today is Afrikaans, they're not really Afrikaans. For me, that's blatant theft. Afrikaans was started as Kitchen Dutch by the slaves, the Khoi Khoi, the Cape Malay, all those collective natives, mm-hmm. What we know as Afrikaans today. So I feel very sad by hearing mm-hmm. the term Afrikaaps is basically given to what was truly started as Afrikaans. It was just packaged in a textbook, and yes, history has its flaws, but I just feel if someone must basically do a true chronological order of events, we will hear and see that Afrikaans was basically started by the natives in the Western Cape.
Yes, so, Shahid, and it's also not slaves, it's enslaved people. That's also something I'm trying to learn too with time. But thank you for that contribution, Shahid, and that's really also what we'll be exploring as part of this conversation. Dr. Williams, it was also Dr. Neville Alexander who said as well that the Khoi, the San, and the Malay, the enslaved people, weren't, if they weren't forced to learn and speak Dutch, then Afrikaans wouldn't exist. Yeah. Let's look at its origins.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. That quote from Neville Alexander comes from the Afrikaaps documentary. Thank you for quoting it so accurately. I think the history of Afrikaans, and especially the enslaved or the slave history of Afrikaans needs to be correctly and inclusively described. Look, Afrikaans is a label just as much as Kaaps is a label, just as much as standard Afrikaans is a label. We know for certain by reading the diaries of, let's say, Jan van Riebeeck, we know for certain, looking at the documents of the VOC, the Dutch East India Company, that indeed that the early origins or the Creole origins of Afrikaans, which should be explored, weren't really spoken by slaves who were born at the Cape, or what was then known as Cap de Boa Esperanza, the Cape of Good Hope. During the 1500s, we have early records of, an early form of Kaaps Hollands or Cape Dutch being spoken. At that point, it was an extremely multilingual society, and rightly so, influenced by the Khoi Sun. But as time ticked on, the Dutch, including the Portuguese, brought slaves to the Cape. The Dutch specifically from the colony of Batavia, which is today known as Jakarta in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. We know that slaves such as, or the enslaved such as Anna de Koning and Angela from Bengala were brought here. But at that time when they came, they already spoke a form of Old Javanese, which they brought with them to the Cape. I'll give an example. The word awe that is used every day by Kaaps or Afrikaans speakers, the word awe does not originate at the Cape. It comes from Batavia, and today known as Jakarta, and it is still used. But it was used as a verb in Batavia that was brought by the slaves and then transformed into a greeting word. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if somebody in Jakarta or Batavia said, Jana aweti wut marang Petrus, that is, John gives money to Peter, that verb, aware to give, traveled with boats to our shores, and then was taken up not only by the enslaved, but also by the Khoi Sun, because the Khoi Sun still uses the word aware. But here's the interesting part. That particular word is also an Arabic greeting word called awefe. Okay. And that means to give good health. And that gives us indication that it was used by the Malay speakers, yes, and also the early Muslim speakers. So really the source of Afrikaans is a source that goes back to its Creole origins before its standardization, before the Gericht, the Genootskap van Regte Afrikaners decided to standardize Afrikaans and take it away from the original speakers of Afrikaans. I'm not disputing what your listener says, but there are contradictions there. And I think what we need to understand is, if we do go back to the origins of Afrikaans and try to understand the emergence and the roots of Kaaps or Afrikaans, we have to understand it happened within a multilingual environment, and it wasn't only spoken in the kitchen, therefore you get kitchen Afrikaans spoken by the enslaved, but it was spoken in this rich milieu amongst many speakers. By the time, and just to add one last point on that, you know, Herman Guillaume, in his book on the origins of Afrikaans, or this history of Afrikaans, in his chapter 2, one of the young characters, he's peeing against a statue, and somebody asked him, wie doet je? And he says, ik ben een Afrikaner. By the time he said that, post 1652, there was already a well-structured form of Afrikaans, which we today know as Kaaps Afrikaans.
Right. Is that how the word itself, what for the language, came about?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I've got to take headlines, Dr. Sure. Williams. Let's take the news headlines, and we look forward to your contributions. If you're listening in on this conversation, 011-883-0702, and also drop us a voice note or send us a text on the WhatsApp line, 072-702-1702. Today's masterclass is on AfriCaps, and there's lots of work that's happened over the years, including a documentary called AfriCaps. Do check it out. There's some content online. But what formed the inspiration for today was Barakat, which is this new film that tells the story of a widowed Muslim mother and her journey through finding love after being widowed. And you're going to love it. It's a family film, but it just gave us the perfect opportunity to explore the history and so much more about AfriCaps. So more with Dr. Quinton Williams after the latest in Eyewitness News. It's
702 Masterclass.
We return now to our masterclass, and we've been speaking to Dr. Quinton Williams, the director of the Center for Multilingualism and Diversities Research at the University of the Western Cape. And he's been taking us through really quite a comprehensive history of Afrikaans, its origins, and of course, AfriCaps, which is really the focus of today's masterclass, which is more, of course, than a dialect. It's a movement. It's a language, a spoken language by, particularly people in the Western Cape. And of course, there are works being created in AfriCaps. Let's go to Liking, calling from Brakpan. Hi, Liking.
Hello, Alva. Who is it?
Don't tell me you're my Wits, Liking.
Hello?
Okay, go ahead, Liking. I went to Wits with the Liking.
So. Oh, yeah. Okay, I thought maybe let me skip that part.
Oh, it is you. Okay. nice to hear from you. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you know what, I was enjoying the discussion there because it's quite deep, you know, because my contribution is that the Africans have got that double negative. Now, that double negative is actually not unique to Africans, you know. It's there even in other sort of Creole languages, you know, because I heard you also saying Creole, you know. And there's also Creole and Patois. Mm. If you look at Haiti and Jamaica, in the Caribbean, there are French Creole there, you know, like Lauren Hill and those type of people. They are French Haitians, you know. And then you get also the Creole, the Patois, English Patois, which is spoken in Jamaica. It also uses the double negative. When the Jamaicans say, don't do something, they say, you must not do that, you know. Mm-hmm. You must not, no one must not throw something mm-hmm. on the floor. That's a double negative. So I just wanted to point that out, that it's possible that Africans actually, now I know I might get crucified for this, it's possible that Africans was actually not first spoken in South Africa, you know. Not Africans as such, but that Javanese, Malay, Dutch type of Creole could have also been spoken in places like New Amsterdam, which was New York, and also in Jamaica and Haiti. I mean, I'm not saying it's to be like that, you know.
Okay.
But if you look at the history of slavery and all those type of things, I just wanted to point out that double negative in Afrikaans is quite interesting.
Well, let's get the view of our guest, Liking. Thanks. Nice to hear from you. Any thoughts or reflections on that comment, Dr. Williams?
Yes, that's extremely important to not to only point out the there's a, you know, that languages are not outside speakers. Speakers use languages, and speakers come in contact with each other, whether they enslave each other or whether it's just by daily contact, everyday language use. And so that things like structural syntactic forms such as double negatives do exist in all languages. Most famously in hip hop language, we have African American English, ain't got nothing, sort of double negatives.
Mm.
But to the idea of the Creole origins, whether it could end up in New Amsterdam, whether our words are appropriated, in terms of the Caribbean islands, we know another greeting word, for example, ahoy, is used by Cap speakers a lot, and
yes.
Ahoy is to grab somebody's attention. It means hi, hello, and it does different meaning word than away. We know historically that Ahoy was sort of used by the Nordic Vikings as a war cry, as ho, ahoy, and that is to mean to stop. And this is a very early use of ahoy. But and through you know, a series of language contacts, that word was taken up by seafaring men, and usually, you know, it is then became used by, you know, by boats and captains and seamen to hail another vessel, to stop that vessel. So it came from the Nordic Vikings into Old and Middle English, and, you know, it can often refer to a dock or cruise or freight or used by a skipper on a boat.
Right.
And often when you use it, when you see a ship, or you say, "Land ahoy!" or "Sip ahoy!" So, but we know in South Africa it was used, and it most likely was brought by slaves enslaved from the Caribbean.
Mm.
And the listeners correct. We need to, you know, to visit the slave past. But here's the interesting fact about ahoy. It was first proposed by Alexander Graham Bell to be used when you pick up the phone. So when you answer your phone, you say ahoy. But it quickly fell out of fashion, and we, you know, we reverted back to hi and hello.
Right. That's a lovely little trivia about the word ahoy. And where does Gamtal factor in?
Oh, yes. That is, I'll make it clear. It is like Saver Afrikaans. Gamtal is a racist label that was popularized by the apartheid government.
Mm-hmm.
The word Gam in Gamtal perpetuates a biblical narrative that God gave the Afrikaners Afrikaans, which is a complete and utter falsity. No metaphysical being gives people a language. We created out of our own intellectual effort.
Yeah.
So that Gamtal, so Gam means ham. It refers to the third child of Noah, banished. Right, and so it's the people in the dirt, the working class people, the uncouth tongues, not worthy of speaking a higher form of standard or pure language.
Yeah,
that is what it does. And you know, the funny thing about Gamtal, it even though there was a large push by academics and linguists who were working on Kaaps and Afrikaans during the 80s. In apartheid, to actually undo this label, including the hip hop artists such as Prophets of the City,
yes,
Rasa van die Kaap, academics, linguists, the academy sustained this idea of Gamtal juxtaposed against pure Afrikaans. It's my belief and the work that we are currently doing, because at our center we are developing the first dictionary,
yes,
of Kaaps. We have to raise the functions of Kaaps. We have to make it a language of teaching and learning. We have to make it a language for literacy development, or further develop that, so that we can get away from that hurtful racist label.
Yes. In fact, in Afrikaaps, you see the experiences of people who society has punished because they speak, yep, Afrikaaps, harshly, yep, judged, and of course excluded from opportunities because they speak Afrikaaps. And so this, yes, work that you're saying needs to happen, potentially, as I was speaking to Ephraim earlier on as well, can remove these barriers and conscientize, yep, society, because I can imagine even in the documentary, it shows how school children, I think they in Lavender Hill, but school children, yes, when they visited by the crew that is part of Afrikaaps and the theater piece that, yes, was done, kind of struggle with this notion of then feeling confident, being confident about speaking Afrikaaps.
The exact scene that you are describing there is that one of the learners, and it's extremely hurtful, if I think about it now, I get very emotional, that the learner says that even if he goes to an interview, he will sound like a gangster. Now, that's very unique to his English, because he flattens the vowel in that we usually say as gangster. He says gangster.
Yeah.
What is more hurtful there is that we are misunderstanding the bilingualism and multilingualism of Kaap speakers. Just because learners, and Ephraim made this point, speakers of Kaaps, when they grow up in the Cape Flats, the first two languages that they hear is the number gang's language, that is the Sabela, and then a version of English that they speak.
Yeah.
Now, it's not because of their own fault. It's just that society has associated with the way that they speak as with the language of the number gangs. They have reduced their bilingualism, multilingualism, to an ideology of monolingualism, and that forever perpetuates an additional layer of marginalization on top of them being work class in our society. We have to do better. We have to raise them up.
Oh, I'm getting goosebumps just listening to you and the work that lies ahead. Let's play a little bit of music, because I also want to hear from you on the work that the universities are doing in this regard. So let's play you music from Remy E, and it is 81st Rivier. Take a listen.
Ek staan hoeken voor die mannen wat sokkel op in een wijnshop. Skryf boeken voor die rupliewe kost, ek sien geen houdop. Ek is een lijnerige baas, kom in mijn kop. Verder is een afgevalde vrug, hou mijn eind op. Ek kom terug, hou ze geët, ek is zij. Waar ek een blijf, waar ze lyrically die beste krijg. Van niet, die ek jou een preview. Van hoe ek glij, laar het mijn, waar ze lyrically die slechte krijg. Met mijn voorbarigheid, schrikale taligheid. Maak je wijs, ek is van die kap. Je wind is los, je wind is los, ik kan maar los, mijn bad zijn wie zag was. Hoe gaat ze mijn eindstep stop? En nog een ding is, heet ik goud om mijn nek. Goud om mijn vingers, heet ik goud om mijn bek. Aha, ik is maar niet ik om te tik. Zo schiet ik je met de kaart, ik ben weer.
Yeah, that is music from Remy E, 81st Rivier. And of course, there are a whole host of other hip hop stars, Dala What You Must, What You Moot, actually, that comes from Youngster in Cape Town. Absolutely enjoy his music as well. So there is a growing movement. There are works being created. And as you were saying, Dr. Williams, that you're working on this dictionary, and all these other efforts collectively help to document and to ensure that there is living documented work around Afrikaaps. Speaking of right. Hip-hop, you mentioned Braza Van Die Kaap, you mentioned POC a little bit earlier on, but your university also held Heal the Hood Hip-Hop Lecture Series, which right. is also about understanding hip-hop culture and some of the conditions in Cape Town that informs this work.
Exactly, yes. We are currently partnering with Heal the Hood in developing the dictionary, the first dictionary on Kaaps, because we can't do it without the community. You need the community's buy-in. But the Heal the Hood Hip Hop Lecture Series that we started at UWC was an attempt to bring together the academy and the community so that we can develop scholarship on hip-hop culture, the use of hip-hop language, address identity issues with that relates to copyright and IP, as well as gender and other social issues that the hip-hop culture deals with on a daily basis. Hip-hop culture is inherently pedagogical, so it was an easy thing to do to get all the hip-hop artists together and then just sort of to debate and deliberate and to think through the various perspectives of how hip hop actually has contributed to advancing our society. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, we often have a very differentiated perspective or understanding of hip hop because of how it speaks to gendered issues or on gender or does not address it. And of course, hip hop oftentimes is very good at projecting itself inward on itself through braggadocio and other practices, but it's sometimes very limited in how it reflects comprehensively outward towards society. And so my center and Heal the Hood felt it that it needed to do this particular lecture series that coincides with the African Hip Hop Indaba every year. Now, we have produced the first hip-hop text or handbook for African hip-hop, for the entire African continent. It's entitled Never Again, and it's published by the Human Sciences Research Council Press. Mm-hmm. And we have, in our first print run, we sold out in a few weeks across the world. So everybody wants to really learn from the South African context and how we, as a center and as a hip hop culture, deals with transformation.
Yes, yes. Oh, such important work. Let's take this call from Abdul, and then we'll play some voice notes as questions are coming in on 072-702-1702. Abdul in Indonesia, hello.
Good afternoon, Azania.
Good afternoon, how are you? Abdul. Very good. Welcome.
I really enjoy all your shows, eh?
And
good afternoon to Dr. Williams.
Afternoon.
You see, I have done some research on the development of the Afrikaans language. Mm-hmm. And what I find that, you see, only in 1910, when the Union of South Africa was made, in the constitution, which two languages were entrenched, English and the Dutch. Up to that time, Afrikaans was not recognized by the Afrikaner. You see, only when Van den Lingen, the one who wrote the stem, he recognized Afrikaans about 900 years ago. But if you look at the development of the Afrikaans language, you find originally the Afrikaans language was written in the Arabic script, what you call Alif Bata. And you find that I have got a book that was written 250 years ago by the great Effendi. I'm sure Dr. Williams will be acquainted with that. Now, he was a great scholar that was sent by the Ottoman Empire to the Cape to teach the Muslims there the language. And then he wrote the first book on Islamic rules that was written in what you call the Arabic alphabet. And thereafter, you find that even all the other great imams of the Cape, they wrote the Afrikaans word, but in Arabic, with the Alif Bata, with the Arabic script. And you find that even, like, for instance, some of the famous people, like was Imam Edward, Ismail Edwards, he also wrote several books in the Arabic in the Arabic script. So originally, the Afrikaans language, if you want to study the development of the Afrikaans language, you see, Professor Van Sands, late of the University of Pretoria,
okay,
he made a lot of research on this aspect.
And I want some
comments from Dr. Williams on that.
Thank you for that, Abdul. Thanks for the call. Dr. Williams?
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, indeed. I completely agree. But I come back to my previous point that there's a confluence of language contact situations that allows us to understand not only the Creole origins of Afrikaans, but also understand its complicated future. Just to add that the work of Ahmad Davids figures here importantly, his book on the Afrikaans of the Cape Muslims. And yes, I don't dispute the influence, but we can't be stuck on the past, the history of Afrikaans, because currently, what concerns Afrikaans speakers is a voice, that is the ability to be heard in all domains or all contexts of South Africa. Because, like I said again, it's not a language of teaching and learning. So it's not taught in schools, or content is not taught in schools, in our primary schools, because teachers also, the majority of the teachers who teach Afrikaans still have a very negative a view against CAPS as a language of teaching and learning.
Yes.
And so we need to transform or change that. And secondly, it has to do with agency. That is your ability to bring about change. Now, CAPS speakers cannot do that because they don't fully take part in the economy. The linguistic landscapes, the signage on the Cape Flats is impoverished. There are no signage, official signage in CAPS. So again, they are being disadvantaged.
Yeah.
There is no structures in place that will help them to move out of the Cape Flats, because what is currently happening, all research proves this or supports this, that instead of the moment the Afrikaans speakers come to school, what happens is a gradual or rapid shift towards English. Parents choose to put the children in English classes, in spite of the fact that they are very strong speakers, first language speakers of Afrikaans.
Yeah, yeah.
And so their path to emancipation, to empowerment, to economic material gain is via English and not via standard Afrikaans.
Right.
We need to transform the basic education system and the university education system so that the Kaap speakers can go to Stellenbosch University and be taught in Kaaps, can go to school and be taught to Kaaps. Nobody can eat a language. It is our responsibility as linguists, parents, academics, government to put structures in place so that Kaap speakers can eat.
Yes, yes. Oh, and that's also that also speaks to the future of Afrikaans. You know, we see, say, in the English language, how every year there'd be a new word, of course, like the word of the year, and English itself, of course, being a hybrid of so many, it's borrowed from a number of languages. What do you foresee is the future of Afrikaans if we fail to make room for it to be able to borrow in keeping and be more inclusive?
Yeah, yeah. When you hear somebody says, I speak Afrikaans, and when you hear somebody says, I speak Afrikaans, even if you don't speak, see the speaker, it evokes a particular idea of the speaker, who that speaker is.
Yeah.
Because that speaker, you know that differentially, that the one who speaks Afrikaans are probably the one who is located in a particular lower class, working class area. Because the majority of the speakers of Afrikaans are working class speakers. And if you hear somebody says speaks Afrikaans, it probably evokes a white Afrikaner speaker, stereotypically speaking. Mm. What needs to happen is we need to understand that the future of Afrikaans will very likely be Kaaps. Mm. But we will need to put plans in place to really empower all the marginalized speakers of Afrikaans. And our constitution guarantees or has legislated for that to happen. It just is incumbent on us to actually help and empower the speakers. Look, I mean, the language, certain dictionaries will tell you what the language has been doing. In our case, what we want to demonstrate with the first dictionary cards is also to illustrate how the language is transforming.
Yes.
Give you an example. The owner of the first, the colored owner of the first horse who won the Durban July, the name of the horse is called Metidung. You can't say the horse's name is Kom Metidung because those are different words.
Yes.
They are used separately, they mean four different meanings.
Mm.
But Kom Metidung reveals that this is a word that is glued together. It's a name of a horse. It is, you know, represents the horse's bravado, speed, and agility as a horse who races in this particular sport.
Wow. Yeah.
And that is part of the normative practice, contraction practice in Afrikaans speakers. Now, in Latin, we call this agglutination, which is a normative practice in languages, in Nguni languages such as isiXhosa and isiZulu. This agglutination, you know, in Latin is called agglutinare, basically means it's words glued together. Give new meaning to a particular phenomenon.
Yes. Dr. Williams, we could listen to you all day. I actually want to sign up for a course right now.
I have a course actually just now happening now. So I have to actually go to my class.
Yes, and we're out of time as well. It's been a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us and, of course, for the incredible work that you're doing.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Wow. That was our masterclass on Afrikaans with Dr. Quinton Williams, Director of the Center for Multilingualism and Diversities Research at UWC.